the destination for the impersonalists, which is the Brahman, and the destination for the devotees, which is the Vaikuntha planets. And even amongst them, there is a difference between the Vaikuntha planets on one hand in general and the Goloka Vrindavan planet in particular. And yesterday we discussed the analogy of the kingdom and the king's palace. So let us just begin with a review of that analogy. And that analogy was also extended further to have greater clarity about the whole situation. So can somebody explain briefly what was this analogy of the kingdom and the king's palace? Yes, a little loudly, it's so everyone can hear.
Person may visit in kingdom, but there are situation, there are one person can go to king's house, another can go to just king's kingdom, and that's the analogy is known for, like Loka or Dhammavadi, they can enter the spiritual sky, just as Madhu, spiritual light. And
devotees,
they can enter
So there are two kinds of people. One can enter into the, both enter into the kingdom, but one specifically enters the king's palace. The other one remains in the kingdom, but somewhere outside in some other accommodation. Similarly, both the Brahmavadi and the devotee, they enter into the spiritual world, but their destinations are different within the spiritual world. One enters the planets and the other remains in the effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti. So what is the kingdom compared to? The whole spiritual sky or the world. What is the king's palace compared to? The Vaikuntha planets. Now further, we also extended this analogy. Somebody please explain how this analogy was extended. Yes?
How it came within the palace, like there is a chief king and there are his brothers who are subordinate kings. They have three palaces. The chief king, he has his own palace. Similarly, even within the palace, Goloka Vrindavan palace.
There may be a king and he may have so many other brothers and they may be subordinate to him or somewhat almost equal to him, and they have their own different palaces, but there's one king, chief king. So in the same way, Krishna has many expansions, each of whom are in charge of one Vaikuntha planet, and the chief planet is that of the chief king, that is Krishna, and his expansions, who are the four-handed Vaikuntha forms, they preside over the different other Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world. Any further issues on this analogy? Yes?
You told that even king's palace, there are so many things, like there, he has relatives, he has friends, he has servants.
Even in the king's palace, there are so many varieties of people who go, like the king's friends, the king's relatives, the king's servants, and so on. Similarly,
Krishna has his relatives and also he has friends and he has servants.
Similarly, in Goloka Vrindavan also there are a variety of devotees who can enter. There are those who are his like his parents, there are those who are like his friends, those who are like his servants, and so on. So different varieties of devotees can enter. In other words, there is so much variegatedness in the spiritual world as there is in the material world. Because there is a variety of devotees, there is a variety of styles and methods and moods of serving the Supreme Lord. Because there is a variety of individuals, individuality is infinitely variegated. Each soul is an individual who has a unique way and a mood of worshipping the Lord. So Krishna has given facility within the spiritual world for all these different moods, and everyone has a place there in the spiritual world, and everyone can be completely satisfied in that particular mood of serving Krishna. Any other points? Yes. Yes, even we see that there may be a servant in the main king's palace. In other words, a devotee in Goloka Vrindavan. A servant is often more intimately associated with the king than, for example, sometimes a minister is. So someone who is an associate of the Lord in Vaikuntha may be living in so much opulence and may seem to be on a very elevated platform, which of course he is. But a servant of Krishna or a devotee of Krishna in the spiritual world will be far more intimately associated with the Lord because of that particular mood and that service. The personal service, the opportunity for very intimate personal service that is given to this devotee. So in this way, we can see that the spiritual world has everything to offer everyone. It is all things to all people. So the spiritual world is waiting for those faithful souls who surrender to Krishna and to the process of devotional service. At the end of that section, Srila Prabhupada repeats Krishna's promise and says that one should not doubt, because Krishna is telling Arjuna the same thing, that one should firmly believe that one who thinks of Krishna at the time of death will return to the spiritual world and one will associate with the Lord. And Arjuna has also very faithfully received this message. He says, Sarvam etadritam manye yanmam vadasi Keshava. O Keshava, I am accepting fully whatever you have said with full faith. So let us now continue reading from the second paragraph on page 26. Today onwards we'll try to move a little faster if possible. A few pages left if you want to finish in just a few days. Quote, the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 6, also explains the general principle that makes it possible to enter the spiritual kingdom simply by thinking of the Supreme at the time of death. Unquote. Krishna has mentioned a particular principle earlier. What is that? That if you think of Krishna at the time of death, you go back to Krishna, to his planet. And now there's a general principle he will state here about the general destination that you receive depending on what you think at the time of death. So that's the verse that's going to be quoted.
Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha.
Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his present body, in his next life he will attain to that state without fail. So in other words, here is the general principle. The particular principle was, you think of Krishna at the time of death, you go back to Krishna Loka. But the general principle is, whatever you think of at the time of death, that state you will attain. If you think of Krishna, you go back to Krishna. If you don't think of Krishna, you go back to something other than Krishna Loka. And then, just as there is so much variety, even if you think of Krishna, similarly, there is infinite variety in the destinations that are possible when you don't think of Krishna at the time of death. For example, what varieties of destinations are available for those who do not think of Krishna at the time of death. One can go to the hellish planets, one can fall into the lower species of life, one can go to the heavenly planets. Even in the higher planets there are so many varieties. So all these varieties of existence within the material world are open to one who doesn't think of Krishna at death. One could even become a human being. Just the other day, yesterday, somebody showed me some article in the newspaper which said that there was this lady called Kalpana Chawla who was an astronaut. She was born in India, but she went for further studies to America, became an astronaut. And she died in one explosion of the spacecraft where many of these astronauts died. And that was about a little over 4 years ago. And one small child, who was a poor laborer's child, somewhere not far from Vrindavan, in Etawah district. This child, this girl, she's only a little under 4 years. She claims she's Kalpana Chawla. And she talks about her previous life and she's terrified about aeroplanes. She doesn't want to look in the sky. And she was describing how she died in her previous life. The family is illiterate. They didn't understand they didn't even know who is Kalpana Chawla. But later the word spread. So whether it is true or not, I don't know. But the question is that even human birth again is possible. So why just hellish births? And even in the hellish planets there is so much variety. 28 different varieties to experience. The lower heavenly planets, the higher heavenly planets, and the planets even higher than that, where the pious dwell, the austere dwell, like the Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka planets. And ultimately, the highest planet in the material world, Brahmaloka. So all these varieties are there. You see, the material world is like a big garment store. You go into a shop that's selling different kinds of clothes. What kind of clothes? How many varieties will you find there? So many different varieties of clothes. The salesman will come and show you dozens and dozens of varieties. This kind of cloth, that kind of cloth, to suit your pocket and to suit your taste. Some will be cheap, some will be expensive, some will be black color, white color, green, yellow, mixed color. So many different varieties of cloths. So also, this material world is like this garment shop that has a variety of dresses to offer. What dress? The material body. Because the Bhagavad Gita says that this material world, this material body is like a dress for the soul. So all these different bodies are on display and we have to choose which one we want. How do you choose? Nobody really likes to go to a lower species. So nobody will say, I want to be a cat or a dog. So when we say, you can choose, what do we mean? Yes. By our actions we are forced to accept. And the price which we pay to get that particular dress is our karma. So with our karma we are purchasing all these dresses according to how we have lived, how we have thought and acted in this life. We will receive an appropriate body in the next life. How we have lived and acted in this life will determine what we will think of at the time of death, and that in turn will determine the exact body we will receive in the next life. So everything is very well organized, as Srila Prabhupada stated earlier in this introduction. So we just have to understand this organization and plan intelligently as to where we want to go. So which kind of dress do we want? Yes? We don't want any material dress. What do we want? What? We want our eternal dress which we never have to change again. enough of changing, washing. It's always a botheration. Whereas we want an eternal dress that will be full of happiness, never gets dirty, never gets worn out, always remains fresh. Of course, that dress is not different from ourselves. That's the spiritual dress. The spiritual body is not different from the soul. The soul is the spiritual body. The spiritual body is the soul. In the material world, there's a difference between the soul and the body. But in the spiritual world, there is no such difference. So let us read further. Now first, we must understand that material nature is a display of one of the energies of the Supreme Lord. In the Vishnu Purana, chapter 6, canto 6, chapter 7, text 61, the total energies of the Supreme Lord are delineated. Vishnu Shakti para prokta kshetra gyakhya tatha para avidya karma samyanya tritiya shakti ishyate. The Supreme Lord has diverse and innumerable energies which are beyond our conception. However, great learned sages or liberated souls have studied these energies and have analyzed them into three parts. All the energies are of Vishnu Shakti. That is to say, they are different potencies of Lord Vishnu. The first energy is Para, transcendental. Living entities also belong to the superior energy, as has already been explained. The other energies or material energies are in the mode of ignorance. At the time of death, either we can remain in the inferior energy of this material world, or we can transfer to the energy of the spiritual world. Unquote. So this topic has been discussed before. The three varieties of energies of the Lord: the spiritual energy, the material energy, and the marginal energy. The marginal energy is the spirit soul. Constitutionally, the spirit soul belongs to the superior energy, but because he is very tiny and has a tendency to be overwhelmed by the lower material energy, he is classified separately as the marginal energy. So let's go on. So the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 6 says, now the verse above is repeated. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tame vaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, his present body, in his next life he will attain to that state without fail. In life we are accustomed to thinking either of the material or the spiritual energy. Now, how can we transfer our thoughts from the material energy to the spiritual energy? This topic will now be discussed in this page. How can we transfer our thoughts from the material energy to the spiritual energy? Why is it necessary to do that? Yes? So that at the time of death we can be on the spiritual platform and think of Krishna. Because if we don't transfer our thoughts in this way, we will remain absorbed within the material world and take birth again here. So Prabhupada will elaborate on this now. Let us read further. There are so many literatures which fill our thoughts with the material energy. Newspapers, magazines, novels, etc. Our thinking, which is now absorbed in these literatures, must be transferred to Vedic literatures. The great sages, therefore, have written so many Vedic literatures, such as the Puranas. The Puranas are not imaginative. They are historical records. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 20, text 122, there is the following verse.
Maya mukta jiver nahi svatah krishna gyan jiver kripay koilo krishna veda puran.
The forgetful living entities or conditioned souls have forgotten their relationship with the Supreme Lord, and they are engrossed in thinking of material activities. Just to transfer their thinking power to the spiritual sky, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas has given a great number of Vedic literatures. Unquote. So why has Srila Vedavyas, by Krishna's arrangement, created these Vedic literatures? Yes? To transfer our thoughts from the material sphere to the spiritual sphere. Kaviraj Goswami says in this verse, Maya Mukdha Jiva. One who is completely absorbed in Maya or bewildered by Maya. Nahi Svataha Krishna Gyan. On his own, there is no way he can get knowledge about Krishna. He is helpless, he is bewildered, confused, ignorant. So by his own efforts, he can never understand what is Krishna. Therefore, Jivere Kripaya Koilo, Krishna Veda Purana. Therefore, Krishna, having mercy upon such confused, ignorant souls, has created the scriptures like the Vedas and the Puranas. And in which form has Krishna done it? In the form of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of the Lord. And he is fully empowered by Krishna to write the Vedic literatures. He is known as a Shaktyavesh avatar. So Vedavyas actually is a title, Vyas. The word Vyas means an editor or a compiler. So one who compiles the Vedic knowledge is called Vyas. And in different eras, there are different Vyasas, different Vyasadevas. The same knowledge is compiled by different personalities in different eras. And they are all called Vyas. Just like in different Manvantaras, there are different demigods. The posts are the same, sun god, Indra and so on. But they have a name. What is the name of the present sun god? Vivasvan. What is the name of the present Indra? Chakra also, not Pundarik, Purandar. Like this, all the different demigods, they have their own individual names. They are individuals who occupy a certain post. So also, what is the name of the current Vyasadeva, who wrote and edited rather the Vedas now? Krishna Dvaipayana. Why is he called Krishna Dvaipayana? Does anybody know? Yes? Because he was born? Because he was born on Krishna Dweep. That's a good guess. Wild guess, yes. Yes, yes. 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 And why Krishna? Because he is dark complexioned. Krishna because he is dark complexioned. Dvaipayana means one who is born on a dweep or an island. The parents of Vyasadeva are Parashar Muni and Satyavati. And he was conceived in the middle of the river on a dweep. So his name, Krishna Dvaipayana. to distinguish him from the previous Vyasadevas who have come. So he has a very difficult task before him, because before him the Vedic knowledge has only been transmitted orally by oral transmission. The teachers used to speak and the students would hear and remember. But having foreseen the difficult situation in Kali Yuga, where people's memories and intelligence would be severely diminished, Vedvyas very mercifully compiled the Vedas in written form. And how did he divide them? That's explained here by Srila Prabhupada. So let's read further. First, he divided the Vedas into four. Then he explained them in the Puranas. And for less capable people, he wrote the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, there is given the Bhagavad Gita. Then all the Vedic literature is summarized in the Vedanta Sutra. And for further guidance, he gave a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra called Srimad Bhagavatam. Unquote. So that's a brief listing of some of the scriptures. Not all of them, just a few. There are so many scriptures, but here Srila Prabhupada is mentioning just a few. There is originally one Veda. Not here in that other room, can you tell? There is originally one Veda, but Srila Vyasadeva divided that into four. So what are the names of the four Vedas? Yes, someone, yes. Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. And each of these Vedas has associated texts. Of course, it's a topic for a lecture in itself. There are different associated texts like the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, the Upanishads. The Aranyakas, Brahmanas are more related to the ritualistic aspects, whereas the Upanishads are more the philosophical aspects of the Veda. And then further Prabhupada explains, there is the Puranas. Now up to this point, all the previous texts like the Vedas originally and the Upanishads, they are called Shruti. What does Shruti mean? Shruti? That which is heard. Shruti. And based on the Shruti, on that which is heard, are the Smriti. That which is remembered. And the Puranas are part of the Smritis. And then there are other itihasas or histories which are also part of these smritis in a broader context. And part of the itihasas, there is the Mahabharata. The essence of the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita. The Mahabharata is a great story that is told with many philosophical points and other lessons to be learned. It is essentially meant for those who are not capable enough of understanding the other scriptures. So this was the Smriti. And then there is the Vedanta. The Vedanta is a collection of aphorisms, very short statements about the Absolute Truth. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that the Vedic literatures are of three kinds. It's called Prasthana Traya. There is Nyaya Prasthan, Shruti Prasthan and Smriti Prasthan. So there are the Shruti, Smritis and the Vedanta. So the Vedanta contains the essence of the Upanishads. At the same time, there is a natural commentary on the Vedanta. And that is, which book? The Srimad Bhagavatam. So it became a point of controversy some years ago, a couple of centuries ago, when the followers of some other sampradayas questioned the authenticity of the Gaudiya Sampradaya and said that every bona fide sampradaya should have its own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. But these Gaudiya Vaishnavas do not have it. Therefore, they are not bona fide. And they went to the king of Jaipur. The Ramanandis in particular went and complained. And the king actually liked the Gaudiyas, who had been serving Govindaji for many years. But he was not in a position to defend them because he was not philosophically so well versed. So he called the Gaudiyas, and the Gaudiyas said, "We do have no need to write one because already the author of the Vedanta himself has given a commentary. So what commentary can be more authentic than the commentary written by the author himself? So therefore we feel there is no need to write a commentary." Nonetheless, because of the insistence of the Ramanandis, the king told them that you must come up with a commentary within a short period of time. Otherwise, I will be forced to declare that your sampradaya is not bona fide. So all the Gaudiyas in that place were very much in anxiety. What to do? How to come up with a commentary of Vedanta in 1 month? And then they went to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vishwanath Chakravarti was very, very old at that time. And he deputed his Shiksha disciple, whose name was Baladev Vidya Bhushan, to go there and discuss with the Ramanandis in front of the king. And there was a nice and lively debate that ensued. And ultimately Baladev Vidya Bhushan took it upon himself to write this commentary. He took the blessings of Govindadev. And just like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives all credit to Madan Mohan for having actually personally written the Chaitanya Charitamrita, similarly, Baladev Vidya Bhushan also gives all credit to Govindadev in Jaipur and says that actually this book is written by Govindadev. I was simply an instrument, just as Kaviraj Goswami says for Chaitanya Charitamrita. And out of gratitude to Govindadev, Baladev Vidya Bhushan named this commentary as Govinda Bhashya. And do you know to whom Srila Prabhupada dedicates his Bhagavad Gita as it is? To Baladev Vidya Bhushan, who wrote, please see here, turn your Bhagavad Gita. Did you find it? Before, just before the table of contents, the page before, what does it say? To Srila Baladev Vidya Bhushan, who presented so nicely the Govinda Bhashya commentary on Vedanta philosophy. So then, this is our Gaudiya authorized commentary on the Vedanta. So in any case, this is the whole structure of the Vedic Shastras. And we cannot, of course, study all these scriptures, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, so many, hundreds of thousands of scriptures. It's impossible to study. Therefore, just to study the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is enough, of the Vedanta Sutra is enough. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the essence of the Puranas, the essence of the all the scriptures actually. Because all the Shrutis, specifically the Upanishads, are condensed in the Vedanta, and Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta, therefore Srimad Bhagavatam contains the essence of the Vedanta as well as the Shrutis. But the Bhagavatam is itself a Purana, therefore it has a Smriti also. Furthermore, the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the Itihas, the Mahabharata. So by studying Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you actually cover the whole range of reading. We must always engage our minds in reading these Vedic literatures. Just as materialists engage their mind in reading newspapers, magazines, and so many materialistic literatures, we must transfer our reading to these literatures which are given to us by Vyasadeva. In that way, it will be possible for us to remember the Supreme Lord at the time of death. That is the only way suggested by the Lord, and He guarantees the result. Unquote. So just see how much emphasis Srila Prabhupada is putting here on reading his books. Let's read these two lines again. We must transfer our reading of these literatures to these literatures which are given to us by Vyasadeva. In that way, it will be possible for us to remember the Supreme Lord at the time of death. That is the only way suggested by the Lord, and He guarantees the result. So what does this mean? That we have to very carefully study Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada is like the modern day Vyasadev, because he has edited Vyasadev's books. Or rather, he has presented Vyasadev's teachings in a way that can be understood in the modern times. So reading Prabhupada's books is a very, very important way for us to transfer our consciousness from the material sphere to the spiritual sphere. It's all a matter of how and where our mind is absorbed. If we regularly hear from and read Prabhupada's books, we can be assured of ultimate success. Of course, we must follow what is written in those books as well, especially chanting the holy names and following all the other principles that I mentioned. Everything we need to know to make our life successful is there in these books. And it is said here, that is the only way suggested by the Lord, and He guarantees success. Now the ball is in our court, so to speak. Krishna has made His arrangements. He has done everything, He has set everything. Now it's up to us. How much benefit do we want to take from it? Depending on how serious we are, we will take the benefit from this. We'll continue. There is no doubt. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudhyacha mayyarpita mano buddhir mam evaishyasya samshayaha. Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time continue your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 7. Unquote. So this is also another famous verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Tasmat. Tasmat means therefore. Therefore, O Arjuna, sarveshu kaleshu, at all times, mam anusmara, you should remember me. The word smaran means remember. So why is the prefix anu mentioned here? Anusmara. Yes.
Every time.
Every time, yes. Following in the footsteps. Yes, anu means following in the footsteps, but specifically here it means to go on doing. The word anu can have different meanings in different contexts. So here it means to go on remembering me. Krishna says, not that you remember one time and then after that forget me, but you should go on remembering me, continuously remember me, always think of me, never forget me. Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismartavyo na jatuchit sarve vidhi nishedhasyo etayor eva kinkarah. What is the meaning of this verse? Who would like to explain? Which I just quoted, somebody? Always remember Vishnu or Krishna and never forget him. Yes? The other part, other half? Yes? All other rules, all the rules and regulations are actually servants, kinkara, of these two rules. That we should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. What are some of the things we can do to always remember Krishna? Positive things. Yes? Quickly, one by one, we can just say things. Chanting the holy name. What else? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Reading Sri Prabhupada's books. Archana, worshipping the deity. Living in a holy place. But of course, in the holy place also, there are like Vrindavan, there are many ways to forget Krishna also nowadays. Then, association of devotees. No, that doesn't come in this category. Following four regulative principles is not a means to remembering Krishna. It is a way of not forgetting Krishna. There's a difference. I'm coming to that point now. Why has it been mentioned? Why not just say always remember Krishna? Why does it simultaneously say never forget Krishna? Doesn't it mean the same thing? Yes? No? Doesn't mean the same thing? Why not? What's the difference? What was the need to say it another way? Yes? No, but if you're always remembering Krishna, then you're not forgetting Krishna. So why should you separately say, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna? Yes? The goal is given. The goal is to remember Krishna. It's directly stated, the goal is remembering Krishna. So why put it indirectly? Say, never forget Krishna. Yes? But that's stated already, always remember. Satatam. Satatam means always. Yes? That's correct. The ninefold devotional process is a way of remembering Krishna. Quite right. But why say separately, do not forget Krishna? Yes. We have the habit of forgetting, all right. Let's put it very simply. The Lord is very practical. He has not simply given us instructions to be followed at an intellectual level. He wants these instructions to be actually translated into day-to-day life. So when he says, always remember Krishna, is it possible for us to simply just remember Krishna always, out of the blue, just all of a sudden? Someone comes to Krishna consciousness 24 hours thinking of Krishna, is it possible? No. It's a goal. It's a goal we have to strive for. So therefore, when the scripture says, always think of Krishna, it means perform activities that will help you to think of Krishna. Always. Like chanting, reading, hearing, worshipping, associating with devotees. So these are the positive activities. The vidhi. Vidhi rep means it's a positive thing you do to attain something. On the other hand, when it is said, never forget Krishna, it means that don't do those things that will make you forget Krishna. Right? Like violating the four regulative principles. If we violate the four regulative principles, then it makes us forget Krishna. Associating with non-devotees, for example. That's another way we can forget Krishna. So that is called a nishedh. Nishedh means a prohibition. So when you go to a doctor, you get two kinds of instructions. You get something that you are asked to do. You eat this, you do this, you do this. And the doctor also says, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. So like this, we are presently diseased. Because we are not able to remember Krishna all the time. Remembering Krishna 24 hours a day is the normal spiritual condition of life for the spirit soul. But since we are diseased, so we are taking instructions for our cure. So the do is always remember Krishna. In other words, do these things which will help you to always remember Krishna. And don't do these things, because if you do them, you will forget Krishna. It's like saying, cook nicely on a good flame, on a good fire, but make sure that the breeze doesn't blow out the fire in the cooking. Suppose you're cooking outside, you have to do something to protect the flame from being extinguished. So do all those things that help you to remember Krishna and see that these efforts are protected. Make sure that nothing else interferes in your following with these positive practices that will help you to remember Krishna. What happens if you follow the do's and don't follow the don'ts? Suppose someone says, I will chant Hare Krishna, I'll be a nice devotee, but I will take intoxicants, I'll go to the cinema, I will go this, at the same time I will hear Srimad Bhagavatam, I will chant Hare Krishna. What happens? Yes.
He cannot be able to do it for the life.
Yes, such a person will not be able to sustain the positive practices also. Why? Why not? Yes. Because his consciousness will get contaminated. With a contaminated consciousness, one cannot develop determination to serve Krishna. Which verse of the Bhagavad Gita? What is it about all the sins being destroyed and pious activity? Tesham antagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te mohadvandva nirmukta bhajante mam dridhavrataha. Dridhavrata means with determination. So one cannot with resolute determination perform devotional service until one's sinful activities have become eradicated and one has accumulated a sufficient volume of spiritually pious activities. It doesn't say that you can't come to Krishna consciousness if you are sinful. When one comes to Krishna consciousness, one may have been sinful up to that point. But if one continues to remain in sinful activity, then one will not get that determination to remain in positive Krishna conscious activity. And therefore, one will fall back again only into sinful life. So both these things are important. We must follow both very scrupulously. This will help us to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. So this is the essence of all the rules and the regulations. And therefore Krishna is advising here, Mam Anusmara. Always think of me. Go on thinking of me. In order to help us go on thinking of Krishna consistently, continuously, then we have to follow the other don'ts as well. And he also says, Yudhyacha. Along with fighting, your battle, doing your prescribed duties in this world, you remember me. Then Prabhupada explains further on this particular point. He does not advise Arjuna simply to remember him and give up his occupation. No, the Lord never suggests anything impractical. In this material world, in order to maintain the body, one has to work. Unquote. So then Prabhupada is saying that Krishna's advice to Arjuna is not simply that you sit under a tree and try to remember me. Because most people in the world will not be able to do that. So he emphasizes practical work. And what kind of work? The work that will be according to our propensity, which Prabhupada will discuss further. So according to our propensity, we have to work in this world, and simultaneously we have to follow the vidhi and the nishedh, the do's and the don'ts, so that we can always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. It has to go along simultaneously. Even if one doesn't actually have a profession in the material world, even if one is serving in the temple on a full-time basis, living in a temple atmosphere, the principle still applies that one has to be completely engaged properly. There should be no scope for Maya to enter into our life. We should be always busy in Krishna conscious activity. By being busy, we don't necessarily mean that it should be in a passionate way, always running, not necessarily like that. Although sometimes if Krishna's service demands it, we should be willing to do it. But the basic point is that we must always be fully absorbed and occupied in service to Krishna. So rendering of service is a very important thing. Because everybody cannot just sit and chant all day or read all day. And even if we could do it, still now we have a responsibility to give this to others, to facilitate the giving of this message for the rest of the world. So therefore rendering of some form of practical service is also very, very important in keeping our consciousness steady and pure. It keeps our lower propensities sufficiently at bay. It keeps our lower modes engaged in the service of the Lord. It dovetails everything. And gradually, because of such service and because of having done the do's and don'ts properly, then we rise gradually above the three modes of nature. So what is this question of propensities? Prabhupada explains here now. Human society is divided according to work into four divisions of social order: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. The Brahmana class or intelligent class is working in one way. The Kshatriya or administrative class is working in another way. And the mercantile class and the laborers are all tending to their specific duties. In the human society, whether one is a laborer, merchant, administrator or farmer, or even if one belongs to the richest class and is a literary man, a scientist or a theologian, he has to work in order to maintain his existence. The Lord therefore tells Arjuna that he need not give up his occupation. But while he is engaged in his occupation, he should remember Krishna. Mam anusmara. Unquote. So Prabhupada is saying, whatever our situation, whatever our propensity, we must work. Work for Krishna. For those who are working in the outside world, you still have to dovetail with Krishna. But all the more for those who have given up material activities, who have given up professional life and such activities, and who are living only in a devotee situation, atmosphere. For them also it is important to be constantly so engaged. And then Prabhupada makes a very important statement. Let's read. If he doesn't practice remembering Krishna while he is struggling for existence, then it will not be possible for him to remember Krishna at the time of death. Unquote. Very important point. So we should not always look for easy ways of living, thinking that, oh, I have this problem, so I can't think of Krishna now. Tomorrow another problem will come, and another. So there will be no end to problems. The struggle for existence will go on so long as we have this material body here. Therefore, Prabhupada says, in any situation of life, whether it is apparently favorable or so-called unfavorable, we should practice remembering Krishna even as we struggle constantly. If we don't practice remembering Krishna in this situation of struggle, there is no question of remembering Krishna at the time of death, when the struggle will be the greatest. Unimaginable struggle if we don't practice now. It will not be possible to remember Krishna at that time. So by leading life in the way that Srila Prabhupada has been mentioning in the last couple of paragraphs and before, we actually train ourselves to remember Krishna properly at that final moment. Let's read further. Lord Chaitanya also advises this. He says, Kirtaniyaha sadaharihi. One should practice chanting the names of the Lord always. The names of the Lord and the Lord are non-different. So Lord Krishna's instructions to Arjuna to remember me and Lord Chaitanya's injunction to always chant the names of Lord Krishna are the same instruction. There is no difference because Krishna and Krishna's name are non-different. In the absolute status, there is no difference between reference and referent. Therefore, we have to practice remembering the Lord always, 24 hours a day, by chanting His names and molding our life's activities in such a way that we can remember Him always. Unquote. So Prabhupada is saying here that Krishna's and Mahaprabhu's instructions are the same. Krishna says, always remember me. Mahaprabhu says, always chant Krishna's names. Both mean the same thing, because the best way to remember Krishna in this age is to always chant His names. What's the verse? Harir nama, harir nama, harir nama eva kevalam, kalau nasteva, 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 gatir anyatha. In this age, there is no other way, no other way, no other way, apart from the name of the name of Lord Hari, the name of Lord Hari, the name of Lord Hari. By adopting this fundamental practice, along with the other devotional practices, we will be able to remember Krishna always. So we have to mold our activities, our daily activities, Prabhupada says, in such a way that we can always remember Him. So we have to be very discriminating, very careful to see what pattern of life we are leading, whether that is facilitating us to remember Krishna, whether we are pleasing Krishna or not. Then our life will be successful. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes. Can you say that again? Which page? Yes. The material energies are in the mode of ignorance.
There is a state of ignorance.
The question is that there is a statement here in the Prabhupada is stating that the other energies or the material energies are in the mode of ignorance. But we are given to understand from the Gita there are three modes. Mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So why is it said here that the material energy is in the mode of ignorance? Because even if we are under the mode of goodness or in the mode of passion, what to speak of the mode of ignorance? We are still forgetful of Krishna. That is a fundamental ignorance. Even a person in the mode of goodness will not necessarily, by virtue of his being in the mode of goodness, be able to remember Krishna. Remembering Krishna always is a transcendental position that is beyond the three modes, and that is being situated in real knowledge. Real knowledge means to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. Sahanish sa mahachidram sa moha sacha vibhramaha. That is the greatest moha or the illusion. It is the greatest vibhrama, the greatest anomaly. It's the greatest disaster, the greatest problem in life. If Vasudevam yan muhurtam Vasudevam na chintayet. If you forget Vasudeva or Krishna even for a moment, that's the greatest ignorance, it's the greatest folly, it's the greatest mistake, and so on. So from a transcendental point of view, anything that falls short of always remembering Krishna with devotion is ignorance. So because ignorance of Krishna comes under the clutches of the three modes of material nature, therefore Prabhupada says here that the material energy is in the mode of ignorance. Any other question? Yes.
Spiritual mind, intelligence and real ego, whether they are different from the soul or non-different?
Spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence and spiritual ego, are they different from the soul or the same as the soul? They are the same as the soul. They are just the qualities of the soul. The soul has intelligence, the soul has mind, the soul has its ego in the sense of identity. The soul understands, I am eternally servant of Krishna. That is its ego. So it is non-different from the soul. It's not like the situation in the material world where the soul occupies a body and then the body has its mind, intelligence and false ego. It's not like that. In the spiritual world there is the absolute platform. Any other questions? Yes. The question is, in the nine ways of practicing bhakti, there is one called pratyahar. No, it is not exactly one of the nine ways. The nine ways of practicing bhakti are what have been described by Prahlad Maharaj, starting with Shravanam Kirtanam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam Iti Punsarpita Vishnu Bhaktis Chen Navalakshana. Navalakshana means the nine steps, the nine processes. So this is called Navavidha Bhakti, ninefold process of doing bhakti. So pratyahar doesn't come in that. Pratyahar comes in the eightfold yogic process. Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Dharan, Dhyan, Pratyahar, etc. The process of pratyahar means to keep away distracting thoughts from the mind. When one is trying to meditate in the system of yoga, then many thoughts will come to distract our attention from the object of meditation. So the meditator, the yogi, then has to struggle to keep away these thoughts. That's pratyahar. We can of course practice that principle even in our devotional practices. When we are chanting, and particularly when we are chanting, so many different thoughts come in. All through the day, whatever we have done, we should have done, what we didn't do. So we have to be very alert to keep away all possible thoughts that interfere with our proper chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So in that sense you can say that this is the principle of pratyahar applied to devotional life. Yes, one last question.
Commentary on
who can write a commentary on the Vedanta, on the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes? Whoever has faithfully studied and lived according to the commentaries and teachings of the previous authorized acharyas. If someone is truly living the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, as the previous acharyas have outlined, then one can also do the same. One has to have a general authorization and probably a specific authorization, but in general also for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada has authorized all his devotees to write. It's interesting. Prabhupada's instructions to all the devotees is not only for reading. There are several instructions when Prabhupada asked his disciples and devotees to write every day as a practice for the sake of preaching. But when it comes to more serious works, like writing a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam, that's a different thing. That has to be done by those who are suitably qualified. Okay, so thank you very much. We'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.
Who was the king of Jaipur when he is actually?
Probably Jai Singh. Probably.
That is Aurangzeb.